All right, there's a few things that happened in youth ministry back in the day that would not fly today. Anyone here participate in youth ministry games, skits that just say, nope, those will never happen ever again? That was my whole youth ministry. We played this game where our youth pastor asked for volunteers, and kids at that age are just so excited. They're like, pick me, begging to be picked. And finally, he chose Mike, my best friend, Mike Ryan. And I'm like, lucky man. He got selected. So he comes up to the stage, and our youth pastor says, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna play a game called Take Off What You Don't Need. And everyone's going, maybe I didn't want to get picked. And so he says, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a blanket over you, and I want you to go under the blanket, and I want you to just take off one item that you don't need. And everyone's like, what is happening? And so all of a sudden you see, some jiggling with the blanket, and then you see a shoe fly out. And you're like, okay, fun game. It continues. And the youth pastor says, no, there's still something there that you don't need. And so then the next shoe comes out, and then the socks come out. And it keeps going. And Mike, for some reason, has all these bracelets and necklaces on. You're like, why do you have so much? And so it took longer than the youth pastor was planning for. And then you're going, this is getting uncomfortable. And then he says, I still think you have something that you don't need. And so then he takes off his shirt, and you see a shirt fly out, and you're going, the game's over right now, correct? Correct? And the youth pastor says, I'm sorry, but there's still something. And so now at this point, everyone's going like, I don't want to be here. I think this is where lawsuits happen. And shorts come flying out under the blanket. Now we're all going, this is uncomfortable. Like, the tension's rising. And the youth pastor persists. Mike, I'm so sorry, but there is still something that you don't need that you need to take off. And everyone's going, no. And all you see is Mike's head pop up. He's like, what? like he understands the weight of this. And then he comes under, and then you see jostling around, and then everyone's going, no. And then you just see his hand come out with his boxers in his hand. And you go, no! Like, everyone erupts in just like uncomfortability. Like, everyone, this is a mixed group of boys and girls, and everyone's like moving away going, I cannot be a part of this. And everyone's thinking the lawsuits are now flying for sure. And then, to everyone's surprise, the blanket flies off and everyone goes, no! And then someone looks and says, what? So then we all are curious, and he's wearing swim trunks. We're like, what's happening? So apparently Mike and the youth pastor, ahead of time, he was planted in to be a part of this. So he knew what was coming. He had an extra pair of swim trunks to go on with that, to mess with everyone. Doesn't mean it was okay. You would still get fired today for an act like that. And something we as a church will never participate in. Just to be clear. We've already ruined the game, right? But his point here was saying, why didn't anyone here consider, when I asked to take off something you don't need, why didn't you consider taking the blanket off? And everyone's like, I didn't think about that. I was just thinking about the other thing. And so then he transitioned it to the point of saying, when I ask you to get down to the root of Christianity, and I say, take off everything that you don't need, at the heart and the essence of Christianity, we take off so many other things without even thinking about what is at the heart of Christianity, and we're not taking off the right things. May have been an uncomfortable game to prove his point, but his heart here is to say, like, what does it mean at the essence of Christianity? Today, my sermon title is Becoming the People of God. Becoming the people of God, to be a church of Christians, what does that look like? And the path I want to take us on to discover that are these three things. To become the people of God, what must be laid down, what must be built up, and lastly, what we're becoming. So what must be laid down? Before we can become the people that God is building, we have to first lay down some things. Before we can really be a part of the church, we have to first lay down some things. And so he begins in verse 1. He says, rid yourselves of all malice and all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and slander of every kind. Now, these aren't just random sins he chose that he has problems with. These are sins that destroy communities. These are community destroyers. They are poisons to a community. They are social toxins of the empire that cannot stay within a community. And so malice is this calloused indifference to the pain of others. You're just like, good, I hope they suffer. That's malice. Deceit of just all lies of any sort. All lies and distortions of truth. Because if we don't have a shared reality of truth, then we can't ever come together. It is impossible for us to coexist. All deceit. Now, hypocrisy, it's the inconsistency between our inner and outer life. And if you've ever been around someone who surprised you to be someone they weren't, you realize that ruins your trust in humanity. It ruins communities. Some of us grew up listening to DC Talk. And there's members, not one, but members within that Christian group that were wildly inconsistent between their inner and outer life. And it's been a poison to the communities. Envy, one of the saddest of the deadly sins. Because it not only destroys the person envying, it's also you want to destroy the person that you are envying. No one wins with envy. And then slander of every kind. It's the verbal form of the deceit, of just spreading the lies so that truth has no place to run. So these are all sins that destroy and blow up communities. And so Peter starts out before talking about what it means to become the people of God. He says, there are some things that you need to check at the door to be a part of the church. These sins blow up communities. And so you cannot build a new life while clinging to the old one. Let me say that again. You cannot build a new life while clinging to the old one. And so of these sins, is there one on here that you struggle to let go? Is there one on here that you kind of have, you protect as your pet sin? You're like, I know it's wrong to be malicious towards some people, but some people deserve it, right? What is that for you? Well, let's, as Peter says, lay it down or rid yourselves of it. And so let's talk about how you can do that. Verse 2 says this, like newborn babes, crave pure spiritual milk so that by it you may grow up in your salvation. Now that you have tasted the Lord, that the Lord is good. And so for those of us who don't believe that we can change, this is this verse is an oasis in the desert. That change is possible, but change doesn't happen just by willpower alone. Change happens when you replace your loves, when you are replacing what you ultimately love. And so let me just pause and encourage those who struggle with change. If you feel like, man, I can't ever change, I want you to hear, like, change is possible. There are people in our midst who've felt the deliverance, who've gone through the change and the metamorphosis that it takes. Change is possible. And how do they do that? They've tasted and seen that the Lord is good. Salvation is not just a rescue from sin, it's a retooling of our loves. And so it's not just about what you remove, it's also about what you replace with it, to taste and see that the Lord is good. So when you taste something that is so good, you are like, I got to get more of that. I want more of that. And the things that you have been filling yourself up on, they become less and less desirable. You go, man, I don't want to waste my time with that. Taste and see and crave that the Lord is good. And so first, we have to lay down the poison. But second, what must be built up? What must be built up is our second point here. And this is the question asking, what is the foundation of our faith? What are we building our faith on? Verse 6, Peter is quoting Isaiah, and he says, see, I lay a stone in Zion, a chosen and precious cornerstone, and the one who trusts in him will never be put to shame. Now, a cornerstone is the first and most important block, rock, that is the foundation in the ancient world that they would set in, that everything else depends on. When you have your cornerstone, you can build everything else around it. It's vital. They take the time to look at all these different stones and say, this one's the perfect one to build on. And if I'm off by just a hair, If this has the wrong alignment, everything else is now going to be off. It affects everything. And so that first stone, it determines the alignment, the angle of and position of every other stone. And so that cornerstone is that important. You guys ever play Jenga? We don't have a cornerstone in Jenga, but you know what it feels like to stack blocks, factory produced, very flat, that are destined to stack. But even in those, you realize if I have that Jenga block in the wrong spot, things are easy to come down. If I remove one of the bottom ones, the base ones, it's all going to come crumbling down. That is the importance of the cornerstone here. And I'm asking us here this morning, is Jesus actually our cornerstone? Is Jesus actually your cornerstone? How would you know? How would you know if Jesus was actually what I'm building my life on? Well, if Jesus is who you're building your life on, it will affect everything else around you, right? It's the foundational block. My values will all be different. The jobs I choose to take, the words I use and how I speak about other people, my priorities and values are all affected by my cornerstone. And so if Jesus is the first and most important foundation, it is going to set the direction for everything else. It's going to set the direction for everything else. And so the cornerstone is not just affecting the structure. It's defining the structure. The cornerstone defines who you are, what you're about. Is it Jesus? Some of us don't just outright reject him, but some of us do. In verse 7, it says, "The stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone." People, when they're building these buildings in the ancient world, they're sifting through different rocks to find what is the perfect one. They're trying to find the flattest one, the one that they can build around. And if they find one that doesn't work or it has the wrong angle, they discard it. And so the image here is that the builders, the religious leaders, are searching for this stone, this cornerstone, this Messiah. And when they get to Jesus, they look at Jesus and they say, "Nope, not going to work." They actually find the cornerstone. It's not that they missed him. They found the cornerstone and they rejected Jesus because the powers that be said, "He's not going to work. We need a fighter. We need a revolutionary to take on Rome." Can you imagine religious leaders seeing Jesus and discarding him? I can. There's a sad story where Russell Moore, he was speaking. He's an author, theologian, writer, whatever. He's speaking at a group of pastors, a gathering of pastors, and he's preaching on the Sermon on the Mount. He's preaching on the Sermon on the Mount, and as he's preaching, afterwards, someone comes up to him, a pastor, and says, "Will you stop preaching those liberal talking points?" And he goes, "Well, what are you referring to?" And he says, "You said this, this, and this. You know, love your enemy and turn the other cheek." And he's like, "I'm literally quoting Jesus." And the pastor's response was, "Well, that worked then, but it's not going to work now." If we get to the point where we're rejecting the very words of Jesus, we've missed the whole plot. We've missed it all. We've said, "This is not my cornerstone." And the whole house is going to crumble down in that way, right? Like, that is wild. Because if we align ourselves with the world's going to say, "Jesus doesn't work. Jesus is too humble and too kind and too meek. Let's find something else." But if you align yourself with Jesus, realize the world rejected Jesus and they're going to reject you too. If they rejected Jesus and you align yourself with Jesus, it's already been done. They've already rejected Jesus, so you should expect the rejection. You should expect that isolation that might come from that. But you're not going to be so isolated because you have the church with you. And this is the beautiful thing, that it's talking about the cornerstone, but not just the cornerstone. In verse 5, it tells us, "You also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood." What is a living stone? I've heard that term. term so often that I just accepted it. But have you ever thought about that? Like a living stone. Such an odd thing to describe human beings. He's talking about the church, that we are living and breathing stones. And so what is he trying to say with this is a living stone is a living, breathing person who is a part of something greater. A living stone is a living and breathing person who is a part of something greater, a part of this structure that is being formed. And that picture is the church. A couple weeks ago, Malcolm and I went to this event where Baylor's acrobatic and tumbling team performed. Whew, do we have any all in here today? Yeah. Hey, before you give them just that light pause of praise, they just won their 11th national championship in a row. Come on. Is that even possible? That's incredible. Congratulations to you all. That is wild. If it's your first one or if it's your fourth one, I don't know for y'all, but that is incredible. To win 11, like I've never heard of such domination in any sport ever. I don't know if that'll ever be repeated. Maybe we'll go to 12 next year. We'll see. But that's incredible. So they just won their 11th national champion in a row. And something just incredible about this whole sport. But this next picture here of the way they stack on top of each other right here, like of how each person is critical to the success of the next person. That they are completely dependent on their team here. Each person has a part to play, and if that person doesn't play their part, it comes crumbling down. This is the picture of the church. That every single person in here has an integral part to play of the church. And the minute you start saying, I don't know if I have a part, it comes crumbling down. And so, like, we need to learn from the 11-time national champs. Why not? Why not learn from them? But this is the picture of the church, that we are living stones, living and breathing human beings who are part of something greater. And if our foundation goes, if Jesus is our foundation and Jesus gets pulled out, they will all come tumbling down. Y'all, this is, if I have anything to say to you graduates, as you're heading off, find a church. Find a church within your first 30 days. If you move to a new city, give yourself a clock. Say, in 30 days, I'm going to find a church. And in 60 days, I'm going to plug in. Like, because without the church, we all suffer. We all feel like we're in that desert just wandering alone. But we are not meant to be alone. Because you cannot accept Jesus as your redeemer and ignore the people he's redeemed. He calls all of us the bride of Christ, that we are all a part of it. It says, commentator Dan Doriani says, the freelance Christian who follows Jesus but is too good, too busy, or too self-sufficient for the church is a walking contradiction. I'm preaching to the choir because you're here today. You're like, of course, yeah, church is great. I'm sure there are Sundays you're like, is the church great? I'm sure there are times you're going, how much do I get plugged in? How much am I dependent on one another? I don't like being dependent on one another. I want to be independent. But the church needs you. We need you, and you need the church. We are built in as living stones built on top of one another. So first, lay down the poison, build up Jesus together, and then lastly, what are we becoming? Verse 9, but you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession. You are a chosen nation. Chosen. Meaning you are not abandoned. If you've ever been a fan of a really poor sports team, not the 11-time national champ acrobatic and tumbling team, but if you've ever been a fan of a really poor team, you know what it means to choose a team and to root for them regardless. You're like, ugh, the Cleveland Browns. I'm just a fan because I chose to be a fan of them. Whatever team it is, if you're not a sports person, if you said, you know, I'm just going to love this person in spite of them, that's what it means. Saying, I am choosing to love you. I'm choosing to be for you even when it's hard. I'm committed to you. And so you are a chosen nation, a nation meaning that you are up against any other nation, a chosen people, a royal priesthood. Royal, meaning you are You are kings and queens. God sees you as kings and queens. And then a royal priesthood. This is where Martin Luther came from, his priesthood of all believers section. That the wild thing that prior to Christ, the way to God was closed, that the only people who could speak to God on the people's behalf were the priests. The only people who could go into the Holy of Holies, into God's presence, were the priests. The way was closed, but what happened when Christ died? What was the very first thing that happens when Christ died? It's this wild event that doesn't get talked about enough. Matthew 27:15 says, "And when Jesus had cried out again in a loud voice, he gave up his spirit. And then at that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom." The temple, the presence of God, that's the curtain that separates us from God. The temple was torn from top to bottom. Meaning not just the priest could go into the Holy of Holies and be with God in his presence, that you and I can go into the very inner sanctum with God. The way is open. You are a holy priesthood. Kings and queens, welcome in God's presence. And I don't know if you about you, sometimes I feel imposter syndrome in God's presence. Does anyone else here feel a little bit of imposter syndrome in God's presence? I'm saying, like, I don't know if I really am accepted here. Every single one of us feels that imposter syndrome. Because we know there are things we've done. But because of what Jesus has done, he says, you are accepted here. You are a holy priesthood. Welcome to come all the way to the very back. A holy nation. And then it says, in God's special possession. Oh, do you have a special possession that it would just hurt if you lost or got stolen? Maybe it's a family heirloom. Maybe it's a collectible. You're going, I've held onto this since I was a kid. And then someone stole it or I got lost. Like it aches when it goes away. That is how God sees you. It aches to think that you would be taken away. God's special possession. When we start to see ourselves this way, this is the people of God. This is how God has made us. When we start to see ourselves this way, it is going to radically change us. It is going to radically change us to actually live out the application of the second half there of verse 9, where he says, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Oh, you are God's special possession, that you may declare the praises. He's trying to say, this is the purpose of the church, the living stones that you and I are all part of. Our purpose is to declare the praises of him who's called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. And I don't know about you, some of us might feel a little uncomfortable around the term evangelism. There's a lot of uncomfortability in our church around that, going, I don't know if I feel like I should be evangelizing people. Because you're like, you're thinking maybe, I don't want to impose my values and beliefs on someone else, or maybe it feels like a small bit of colonization or something like that. There's been ways that evangelism has been distorted, 100%. But if evangelism is not the distorted version, but it's that, just declaring the praises of him who's called you out of darkness into his wonderful light, isn't that great? Isn't that what we were meant for? This is the way, what is his name? D.T. Niles. Did I say D.T.? D.T. Niles. He's a Sri Lankan pastor, and he says, evangelism is one beggar telling another beggar where he found bread. If that's evangelism, I'm on board with that. That all we're doing as one beggar is telling another beggar, they got bread over there. And I want some of that. If the light has shone in the darkness, you can't help but say, hey, there's light here. There's hope here. Like, I think when the church actually realizes our calling and actually realizes what we've been called out of, we're able to present a very compelling gospel message of just saying, Jesus is good. That When I find something that I found to be delicious, you know, when I have something I found like this barbecue, it's amazing. I tell other people about how amazing this barbecue is. And I say, this rice, I mean, the guy who made it is a wizard. You tell people about something that you've tasted that you said is good, and you start to crave it, and you want to tell other people about it. This is all that Jesus is asking us to do. See, this is our purpose now. It's a natural response to this. Earlier this week, I got the opportunity to go on this trip, and we were in Mexico and in San Antonio, and we were working with different churches and pastors and hearing about their immigration ministry and ways that can encourage and influence maybe some things we're going to do. But I got to speak with this pastor in San Antonio. Their church is only 3 years old. She helped start it in 2023. 3 years old, and they've had 26 people detained or deported from their small little church. That would be a whole church plant. 26 people detained or deported from her small little church plant. And I mean, the callousness and maliciousness of the empire, it's rough. But two, that's the empire. Empire is going to empire. But the second thing that struck me was the beauty of this church that has found a way to reach out and to share the love of Christ with 26 immigrants in their small time. And I had to ask them, I was like, you're an underground church. Literally, they use that term properly. They're not literally underground. They're an underground church in the sense that they have no website. They have no social media. They have no phone number. They meet inside of another church in the afternoon of that church, and they have no outdoor signage. And so I'm like, how does anyone find you? We got lost trying to find their church. We're like, where is this? How does anyone find you? And her answer made it so obvious. We helped one immigrant family, and word got out. And so everyone came flocking. Said, this church sees us and cares about us. Well, duh. Because when you see something, when you see the church being the church, it's so compelling that people say, I want to be a part of that. Y'all, the deacons tell me this is true about our benevolence fund, that word has gotten out, that you have loved the people in our city so well that people are consistently asking for that. Thank you. This is the way it's supposed to be. That when we find something so good and so beautiful, like the church, like what Jesus, his bride, and we tell others about it. And so let me tell you some things this week I want to encourage you to do. The so what. First, lay down what divides. Lay down what divides. I want you to act like a home inspector this week. If you ever know they have these carbon monoxide detectors and going around and detecting whether you can even have one of those in your house. In fact, I encourage you to have one. Right? It's this scentless poison that'll kill you from the inside. You won't even know it's there. I think that's some of these sins that are destroying the church right now. And so as you look at those sins that are destroying the church, malice, deceit, hypocrisy, envy, slander, where has that come up in your last 10 conversations? I want you to do an audit, whether it's through your text messages or social media posts or just conversations. Where have these sins come up? Malice, deceit, hypocrisy, envy, or slander? And I want you to create a plan to air out the house. As it can't stay, it's going to kill us. Second, let's build up what lasts. Is Jesus truly your cornerstone? If you start to recognize that maybe there's some areas of your life that Jesus is not the cornerstone, where you said, am I really building my life on Jesus? I don't know. I want you to think about it one concrete step this week. To realign with Jesus and his church. And maybe that's just saying, I want to become more dependent on the church. What does that look like? I want to become more dependent on one another. Join the church. Join a small group. Reach out. We're going to have book clubs in the summer. I know small groups are about to take a break. But reach out. The church needs you, and we need it. And then lastly, live into what you are becoming. Hear how Jesus is cherishing you. I don't think we believe it. I don't think we believe that verse that says you are his treasured possession. But once we do believe that, we can throw off the imposter syndrome, and then we can run headlong into the Holy of Holies because the way is open. Let's go. And once you go, you're going to want to tell someone else about it. So this week, I encourage you, spend some time with Jesus and tell someone else one beautiful thing about Jesus and his bride.